It's Living on Earth. I'm Steve Curwood. We continue now with Democrats on the Environment, a special forum for the party's presidential candidates sponsored by the League of Conservation Voters.
Senator Lieberman, I've seen you at the climate change talks in Kyoto and Buenos Aires. The Kyoto process has run into a brick wall known as the Bush administration right now, but the law of the land does include the UN Framework Convention on Climate Change. This is something that was signed by the United States, ratified by the United States Senate. Perhaps you voted to ratify it, in fact. My question is this. This law, which requires the United States to implement programs to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, to report them, and to attempt to make the effort to get to a reduction, how well do you think this law is being implemented by the Bush administration? And if you were President of the United States, how would you implement the law of the land, otherwise known as UN Framework Convention on Climate Change?
Like most every other environmental law, this one is not being at all implemented by the Bush administration. I mean, this is the most anti-environment administration in our history, much worse than Reagan and incredibly worse than the first President Bush. There's a disregard for the law and for the reality of the threat that environmental pollutants frame our future and our health. People are hurting from what's happening now. The problem with the UN framework, of course, is that it had no teeth in it. That's why we went to Kyoto. That's why the nations of the world came together and said, we've got a problem here, and if we don't deal with it, people are going to get hurt. Low-lying lands are going to disappear, and that includes in the United States of America. Diseases will travel to places they haven't been before. This requires leadership. That's why Kyoto was negotiated. I was there. Vice President Gore was there. We were moving towards something, and then the Bush administration just came in and said, forget about it. An act of colossal irresponsibility for which history will hold this administration accountable. I will be committed to doing something about this from the first day I get into the Oval Office, and that will begin with the McCain-Lieberman Climate Change Control Bill. Standards, caps.
Senator, you're out of time.
And market-based mechanisms to make it happen. We got a lead here.
Well, but with all due respect, I don't think you really responded to my question directly. The Kyoto... Well,
I certainly responded to your question.
The UN... That's true. Thank you.
Yes.
The UN Framework Convention may not have any teeth, but by golly, it's got gums and a bite to it.
Yeah.
And what it does is it requires the United States government to implement a program of greenhouse gas reductions. We're required under this.
Right.
30 seconds.
We're in violation of it. It has no teeth.
So what would you do?
I'd continue to do all the other things that I've done. My energy and independence program would require much greater fuel efficiency, 400 miles a gallon. The Clean Power Act that I've co-sponsored with Jim Jeffords would clean up those power plants and close down the old ones so there wasn't as much junk in the air, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Look, the important thing about greenhouse gas and climate change responses is, as somebody said to me, it's a win-win. Not only do you prevent the most catastrophic effects of global warming in the future, but today you clean up the air. So people are not dying, and 150,000 kids in Los Angeles have asthma, aggravated by dirty air. If we did took some of the steps I've talked
Senator,
about,
Senator, your 30
they'd be
seconds
healthier.
Has expired. Pilar, a question for Governor Dean.
Governor, water quality is becoming a bigger issue for populations in the inner cities when all plumbing or treatment plants are decaying and in rural areas and small communities. There needs to be an investment in infrastructure, but in the last 20 years, the federal government hasn't lived up to that. Do you have plans to address this?
I do. I think the president's been incredibly foolish to have these enormous tax cuts, which really haven't helped Americans with jobs at all. Here's what I'd do for jobs. First, stimulate small business because they create more jobs than large businesses do, and they don't move their jobs to Indonesia. And secondly, invest in infrastructure. Now, in our state, we're very careful about what we do. We invest in sewer and water, but we don't invest in sewer and water if it leads to urban sprawl. We don't want certain infrastructure because we know if we build it, then the development that we don't want follows. But we need to fix the old infrastructure now. It'll create jobs. It'll build an infrastructure for the new economy, and it'll reduce the pollution that's going into our waters. And that's a much better investment than giving tax cuts to people like Ken Lay.
Another issue with water is the levels of toxics in the water, and specifically mercury. If you go to the supermarket here in California, you'll see notices saying that children and pregnant women shouldn't eat certain kinds of fish because they contain high levels of mercury. What would you specifically advocate in terms of reduction in mercury and other emissions?
This is one of the ways you can win on an environment. You've got to connect people with the consequences. You can't just talk about coal pollution, which is the way to reduce mercury. Pollution is to reduce what's going on in the Midwest. You've got to say just what you said, that you can't eat the fish in my part of the country because there's a mercury advisory in almost every freshwater lake in New England and in the East. So you've got to win by connecting what happens to the environment to average American voters, not talking about greenhouse gases and TMDLs and all these things, connected to their everyday lives. What you do with mercury is what we need to do with mercury. We need to deal with the emissions from coal-burning plants in the Midwest, and we need to fundamentally go after all the sources of mercury, but most of that is air pollution.
Paul Rogers, question for Senator Kerry.
Senator Kerry, one of the other Democratic candidates, Dennis Kucinich, isn't here today. He's at a rally with Ralph Nader on the East Coast and the Green Party. Some environmentally-minded voters have joined the Green Party. Supporters say that the Green Party is not as beholden to special interests as the Democratic Party is, while opponents say that Ralph Nader's candidacy in 2000 cost Al Gore the election by siphoning away critical votes in Florida and New Hampshire. What's your view of that?
Well, I think it did obviously siphon away some votes, and clearly Al Gore had to spend a significant amount of money in a number of states, Washington, Oregon, elsewhere, in order to pull back from where it was. I know Ralph Nader, and that's probably appropriate here. I've sat with him and talked to him already in the course of the last months. Look, we have to talk to those people. To a degree, it is the fault of the Democratic Party for not having stood up and been clear about our agenda. And I believe we have to make it crystal clear. I see no reason. I went through and read the Green Party platform. I don't agree with every single part of it, but I certainly agree with the components on the environment and raising the standards of our trade negotiations and things we need to do to bring people up. I'm going to talk to those people, and I am going to provide a series of clear choices on water, on air, on environmental justice, on global warming. We cannot drill our way out of this problem. We have to invent our way out of this problem, and we need to get about the business of doing it now.
Paul,
I think we can attract those voters.
Want to ask a follow-up?
Specifically, which sections of the Green Party platform or Green Party issues do you disagree with?
Well, it's a long platform, and I don't have time in 30 seconds to go through it all, but they were specifically opposed to any of the trade agreements in the 1990s, and I thought Bill Clinton led us to a place where we created 43 million new jobs. We had the lowest inflation, the lowest unemployment. We not only balanced the budget, but we paid down the debt of our nation for two successive years, and we did it trading. I want to lead us to a place where we not only create that kind of economy, but where we have a smarter set of trade alternatives now that raise the standards on labor and environment. No goods should ever enter this country that have touched the hands of children, and we need a president who begins to enforce those kinds of standards.
John North, question for Governor Dean.
Governor, you've had reservations, I understand, about the Kyoto Protocol. Can you give us your problems with the Kyoto Protocol, and what would it take for you to support it?
First, let me say that I think we need to find a way to sign the Kyoto Protocol. The biggest problem with the Kyoto Protocol is it doesn't ask the developing nations to do anything, and that's an enormous problem. We don't want to move our smokestack industries offshore to avoid the things they're going to have to do to comply with Kyoto. So what I want to do is, when the window comes up in 2006, we need to get back into the negotiations, and here's my proposal. Allow developing nations, require them to comply, reduce greenhouse gases. Give them a 20-year run-in instead of a 5-year run-in that we ought to have, and then have the G8 pay for between 25% and 30% of their costs. We have got to get all the – I've spent some significant amount of time in both China and Brazil. I know what they're doing to the environment there. That is not acceptable, and Kyoto has to apply to all of us. But we need to be in a mode where we negotiate it successfully so we can sign it.
Connected to that, do you believe in the United States in a hard cap on pollution from power plants?
Pardon me?
A cap on pollution from power plants?
Yeah, we should. I'm going to use my remaining 25 seconds to put forth a proposal that I haven't been able to do because of this format. I'm the only guy here who's ever had a deal on the ground with brownfields and with Superfund. My proposal for that is that let the federal government take over the liability and let them sue the corporations, because I can tell you I've had Superfund sites in my state that has taken years and years and years to clean up. We'll do the cleanup first and then let the feds sue to let the polluters pay. We need those brownfields. We need the Superfund's sites cleaned up first. Let the feds go after the corporations. Get the cleanup done first.
I just have to point out that the format was negotiated between the campaigns and the sponsors of the event.
I got my 25 seconds.
Pilar Marrero, question for Reverend Sharpton.
Reverend, among the top spenders in campaign contributions and lobbying in Washington are some of the biggest oil, energy, and automakers who have thrown tens of millions of dollars to politicians seeking to influence policy on issues such as global warming, fuel economy standards, and the Kyoto Protocol. Don't you believe there's something wrong with the system that allows this, and what would you do to fix it?
Well, I not only think there's something wrong with it, I think the results are what we see. They've been able to, in effect, buy their way into situations that have rendered the American people in an environmental precarious position. I think that we need to expose that. One of the things I think we must do in 2004 is have a theme in the Democratic race of follow the money. And we need to show where the money went and where clean water went, where the money went and where clear air went, where the money went and where regulations of some of these big oil companies. I mean, the Bush administration has been so pro-oil at a time that we need the world to get off of this hostage situation we're in terms of dependent on Middle East oil. It is so oily in Washington now, it's downright greasy. And we need to make that case to the American people to get the greasy people out of Washington and bring the right people in.
Now, should high-level officials like presidents and vice presidents and congresspeople that have had some friends in the oil industry or have been in the oil industry, should they excuse themselves from making these decisions?
Well, I clearly think where there's a conflict of interest in any area, and especially this one, people should excuse themselves. I don't think they will, so I think that the American public is going to have to do it for them. This administration has clearly had more conflicts of interest in 2 years than we've probably seen in a lifetime, and I think that we've clearly got to expose. We have got to stop being timid about things. They went after the Democrats with a vengeance on non-issues. We have real things to go after Bush and Cheney about in their conflicts. We're not being defeated as much as we're surrendering. We need to take the fight to them on behalf of the American people.
We have some questions that have been submitted by people in the audience, people on the internet, and I want to take the few remaining moments we have to ask those. And let me put the next one to Reverend Sharpton. I'll just go down the list. Brian Holland of Atlanta, Georgia asks this: globalization has provided economic growth, but also has had significant environmental impacts, such as deforestation and overfishing. How would you hold multinational corporations accountable and address environmental degradation associated with trade?
Well, first of all, I'm opposed to many of the trade agreements, including NAFTA and others in the 90s. I think that for any trade agreement, though, that I would support as president or advocate in this campaign, you must have a strong environmental part of the trade agreement that is enforceable. We cannot, in the name of trade, go against the best interests of the people of the world. We have too long allowed government to say we must sacrifice environment, sacrifice health, in order to stimulate the economy, either globally or domestically. And I don't think that's a fair exchange. I think we need a president that says clearly some things are non-negotiable, and that, in my judgment, should be non-negotiable.
Next question to Senator Mosley Braun. This comes from Dan Scholes of Roselle, Illinois, I beg your pardon. What do you feel is the most significant challenge to protecting our remaining wilderness areas, and how would you address it?
Well, the most significant challenge is this administration, it seems to me. I think that we have to be very clear about wildlife conservation, funding fish and wildlife, to make certain that we actually enforce and don't let them continue to gut the Endangered Species Act. I think we have to deal with the issue of the sprawl that's endangering our wilderness areas. And we have to, again, go back and look at the whole issue of enforcement, which I think really is the biggest issue we have with this administration and where we are right now. And in that regard, I want to point out that one of the most insidious things that they're doing has to do with packing the courts. They are packing the courts with jurists who have an anti-environmental agenda, and this is something I think we really have to be very concerned about. We also have to be concerned about breaking up the kind of revolving door cabal that this administration has put in place. Stop is upside down. the cabal that they put in place of people who really have no problem at all with allowing for development to run amok and destroy wilderness areas without concern for protecting our heritage.
I'm going to go a bit out of order because, according to our timers, Governor Dean hasn't had quite as much time as the other guests have. So, Governor Dean, I'll put this one to you. This comes from Phil Landrigan. It doesn't say where Phil Landrigan is located. Children are especially vulnerable to environmental contaminants because of their developing immune systems. What steps would you take to protect children from environmental threats?
You talked about environmental racism. I think the key to the environmental racism is to raise the bar for all pollution. And if more pollution is in minority communities, that stops too. That applies to all children. We've talked about lead. That's absolutely critical. We've talked about mercury. That's absolutely critical. The bottom line is, if we want to win this election based on environmental issues, we have got to connect the environment, as I was saying, to mercury directly through families, to talk about what happens to your child when they go to the emergency room with an asthma attack. Those are the kinds of things that we can do. Talk directly about children and then connect it to the environment, just as we connect national security of the environment by not having a renewable energy policy of any kind.
That's all the time we have for questions and answers. Once again, according to the format negotiated by the campaigns and the sponsors, thanks very much to Pilar Moreiro, Steve Curwood, Paul Rogers, and John North for joining us.
You've been listening to Democrats on the Environment, a special forum for the party's presidential candidate sponsored by the League of Conservation Voters. Our broadcast was produced by Chris Ballman and Ingrid Lobet with help from Nate Marcy. For more on the environmental voting records of all the Democratic candidates and an analysis of the Bush White House voting record on the environment, visit our website, livingonearth.org. That's livingonearth.org. We're produced by the World Media Foundation in cooperation with Harvard University. Allison Dean composed our themes. Our technical director is Al Avery. I'm Steve Curwood, executive producer. Thanks for listening.
Funding for Living on Earth comes from the National Science Foundation, supporting coverage of emerging science, and Stonyfield Farm. Organic yogurt, cultured soy, and smoothies. 10% of their profits are donated to support environmental causes and family farms. Learn more at stonyfield.com. Support also comes from NPR member stations and the Annenberg Foundation, and Toms of Maine, maker of natural care products and creator of the Rivers Awareness Program to preserve the nation's waterways. Information at participating stores or tomsofmaine.com.
This is NPR, National Public Radio.